We're talking with Reverend Barry Downing about biblical UFO revelations, his new book. The premise being those ancient biblical miracles were actually UFO ET type events designed to create a religion or inspire a religious belief. Makes you wonder, what about the ones we're having now? Is that meant to modify our spiritual or religious views? We'll ask that question. Get into a story he tells in the book about President Jimmy Carter, and maybe turn back around and talk about the Skinwalker Ranch and how that fits into this picture as well. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Downing, there's a quote in your book that made me kind of chuckle. It's from a conversation you had with a Catholic lady, and I'm paraphrasing here, but in essence, you said to she said something to you to the effect that Catholics are better able to handle this stuff because they still believe that miracles can happen. I guess that's the context for my question. If the ancient UFO events, biblical UFO events, were meant to inspire a religion, are we to think the same thing about modern UFO events?
Yes, but it's a little tricky. Let me just say that Catholics in general have handled my material better than Protestants. You know, fundamentalist Protestants, of course, think they're demonic or fallen angels. Liberal Protestants don't think UFOs exist or that the Red Sea parted. So that's where I am with both them. Whereas Catholics have a committee to check on whether or not a miracle's really happened. I know my Presbyterian church does not have any committee that would check into a miracle. We just don't expect any, you know. So what I'm basically saying is way too far out in left field for most Presbyterians to handle. But at the same time, I can't complain that the Presbyterians have been bad to me about it. They've just mostly been silent. Let's talk a little bit about the Catholic situation. I say in my book that I think, and I'm sure, that since the Catholic Church at the Vatican is basically a state as well as a church, that they have the right to send ambassadors to other countries. They call them nuncios, and they do this. And I'm sure that way back, you know, in, we'll say, the 1950s, when flying saucers were talked about, that, of course, it would be part of the conversation between any ambassador from the Vatican to another country. And likewise, probably the ambassadors from the countries where they're seeing UFOs would be bringing it up to somebody from the Vatican and saying, what does the Vatican think about this? Do the Catholics have a position on extraterrestrial life and all that? And of course, the Pope has his own astronomer. I don't know of any Protestant churches that have their own astronomer. And they even have their own observatory out in the West. So Dolan and Zabel both say that Catholics seem to be in the leaders as far as handling UFO material, and that makes sense. The problem is that I think that the Catholic Church is not find it easy to change about things. The current Pope suggested, for instance, that it might be okay for divorced Catholics to receive communion. And several Catholics are saying he should be tried for heresy for this. So even though we think that the Pope is very powerful, in fact, he doesn't have a lot of wiggle room when it comes to doctrine. I can't imagine a Pope saying, I have news for you. The angels are really space guys, and they use technology to part the Red Sea and raise Jesus from the dead. That would be the end of that Pope. Now, in terms of Catholic history, one of the interesting things that's happened in 1917, on October 13th, was a miracle at Fatima, which I talk about in Chapter 6 of my book, Dealing with Catholics. And what happened was that three children had a series of contacts with some type of a being that came to them in a globe of some kind, or a ball of light, which is similar to a lot of the reports that go into MUFON these days. But in any case, they came on the 13th of May the first time, and told them that they were coming back again the 13th of every month until October. And on the 13th of October, there'd be a fantastic sighting or display. This is kind of what Anne Druffel says about the sighting at Fatima that happened on the 13th of October 15th of 1917. Looking up, the crowd saw the thick rain clouds parting like curtains at the zenith. The rain stopped as a huge silver disk, the apparent size of the sun, shone on the top of the sky. It came out as much light as the sun, but the 50,000 witnesses could stare at it without apparent harm to their eyes. The disk began to dance, whirling rapidly like a fireworks wheel. At its rim, a crimson tinge threw off flames, reflecting onto the throng below in all colors of the spectrum. The disk stopped three times, then resumed its rotating gyrations. Suddenly, it plunged in a zigzag motion toward the Earth. Now, what I think is, if this had happened, now the 100th anniversary of this sighting was just this past October 13th. If that sighting had occurred this past October 13th, my guess is that 49,000 of those Catholics looking at that site would have said they've seen a flying saucer. The other 1,000 would say they don't believe in flying saucers. So I can't think that's how it would go now. And I think that the Vatican people realize that our context has changed because of the UFO situation.
Well, there'd be a heck of a lot of cell phones in that crowd, and yes, they would, and that would be all over social media, all over the planet in a matter of minutes. I wonder how religion would react. You use the disclosure book, AD, by Dolan and Zabel as sort of a structure for your book. What do you think would happen?
Well, in terms of the Catholic situation, I don't know what they do. Corrado Balducci, Monsignor Corrado Balducci, was kind of out front on the UFO stuff in Italy. He went on Italian television saying that he believed UFOs were real, too many people were seeing them. Also, what he didn't say was that he was a Catholic ambassador to other countries, and he didn't say that, but I think that he had confirmation that UFOs were real, they were physical, maybe even that the Americans had some crashed UFOs. And so he couldn't bring that up because he would have learned that in diplomatic confidentiality. But I think he knew that that was there, and they felt that the best thing to do was to say, we know they're there, I believe in them. The problem is that he said that UFOs come from the natural world, whereas demons and angels come from the supernatural world. And that would protect the doctrine of the supernatural within Catholic theology. And the idea that supernatural is pretty important in Catholic theology. The problem is, the word supernatural wasn't introduced into theology until about 500 years ago. It's not a biblical term. So, from my point of view as a Protestant, I'm kind of free to explore what the Bible says. And if it turns out that the Red Sea was parted by advanced technology, that's some adjustment to my thinking, but it doesn't blow my mind totally. But in any case, I think that the reason that the Catholic Church has not gone totally public on the UFO thing is that they've got a theological problem, that if the Fatima miracle, which was probably called supernatural at the time, were to occur now, it would be called some type of advanced technology. And I don't think they know how to make this adjustment in their theology. One of the interesting things, I don't know whether you've seen the book by Stephen Greer called Unacknowledged.
Yes.
But Daniel Sheehan is a Catholic attorney who's had worked with several high-profile cases involving the Constitution. He represented the New York Times and the Pentagon Papers case. And he was asked to assist in preparing a briefing paper for President Carter in regard to UFOs in January of 1977. At the time, he was employed as a chief counsel for the United States Jesuit headquarters in Washington, D.C. He got the idea of contacting the Vatican Library, seeking access to that section of the Vatican Library where the information about UFOs and extraterrestrial intelligence was. Much to our surprise, about 2 weeks later, we got a letter back saying no, that we couldn't have access to this. We were shocked. This is the United States headquarters for the Jesuit order. Sheehan sent another letter saying he would abide by all the Vatican restrictions. He received a second letter also denying him access. So I think that if UFOs were to do a kind of a Fatima thing again, you know, like land at a few football games just to say hi and then fly away again, that would pretty well blow the cover of the United States and the rest of the world covering up UFOs. So I think it's within the power of the aliens to end the cover-up anytime they want to.
And but they don't.
They would. And if people want to pray, this is the thing to pray for, because I think we're in a bad place. And I think that the longer the lie goes on, the more trouble those who are siphoning off trillions of the dollars for their little projects will use these powers to, I think, enslave us rather than to help us. I mean, that seems to be what all the spy center they built with secret money is all about.
But then you have a story about President Jimmy Carter in the book. And of course, as all listeners of this program know, Carter had his own UFO sighting. And then as a candidate for president, he said, when I'm elected, I'll open up the UFO files. And he didn't.
Right. Dolan has gone into this some. I also had a contact that had some link to the Carter administration. The basic story was he'd asked to have a report given to him. And in fact, Sheehan here says he was able to see the report that was sent to Carter and that it was very explicit that the aliens were there. Part of the story, as I heard it, was he was told that the aliens were involved in starting several religions on Earth, and in fact, they even put Jesus on Earth. And he's a very devoted Christian, and when he heard that, he felt there was no possible way he could tell that story to the American people. So that was the end of his desire to expose the truth about UFOs. Obviously, this is speculation. I don't have proof of this, but it sounds plausible to me.
The characterization of UFOs as demonic or evil, the idea of ETs resembling gargoyles and aliens, and they must be demons too, is a convenient categorization, I guess. If you want to label them as evil and shut down research or investigation into these programs, and as hard as it is to believe, I think you know, Dr. Downing, that there are people in the military and intelligence apparatus at high levels who are fundamentalist in that belief and have used that as a reason to shut down further inquiry.
Yes, well, here's a passage in Exodus that I'm not sure a lot of people pay attention to. This is chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I might show these signs of mine among them, and that you may tell in the hearing of your son and your son's son how I have made sport of the Egyptians and what signs I have done among them, that you may know that I am the Lord." This is not a phrase you usually associate with God, that God would make sport of the ruling powers of a country like Egypt, but that's what was going on with the 10 plagues that came, the last being Passover. It sounds like a vicious sport to kill off all the firstborn of the Egyptians, but that's the biblical story. I think we need to have a certain amount of fear of our modern aliens, not total fear, but at the same time, I don't think that we should expect them to approve of everything we're doing. Obviously, what they've done with kind of unplugging the computer systems in our nuclear silos suggests they're not pleased with the possibility that we'll be blowing the place up with nuclear weapons. So we've got a reality there that has independent judgment about how humans behave, and I don't think we can totally predict how they will behave if they don't approve of what we're doing. And if they act in a way that doesn't approve of what we're doing, does that mean they're demonic? Okay. So that's kind of where I stand on the issue of the demonic. I'm not saying that you don't see them doing bad things. What I would ask is, are they only bad because it's from our point of view? If you were an Egyptian having your firstborn killed, you for sure would say that whatever that power was, it was demonic, you know?
You know, you have to worry also are the intentions, if they are extraterrestrial, or at least they're alien of some kind, come from somewhere else, what their motives are. That's not real clear. It's a lot of gamesmanship. They appear here and there, but nothing definitive, demonstrable. And you have to wonder if they were to do a disclosure level event that could not be denied, might they? If I were involved in an organized religion, I would wonder, would they want to be worshipped? I mean, that's one possibility. We are your gods. We are your creators. Bow.
Yes. Well, we can't rule out. I mean, if the aliens are doing the things we've heard about, such as cattle mutilations and so on, as well as abducting people and doing what appear to be sexual exams on them, can we suppose that these beings would not have advanced biological knowledge? Could we suppose that they've not been involved in at least redirecting the biology of the earth? So basically, the biblical faith has not dealt with what the angels might have been doing before the earth was created, but they're understood to have a life before the earth was created. The kingdom of heaven from which Jesus came and to which he returned is seen as an eternal kingdom compared with ours, at least. And so I think we will have to rethink the idea of creation and give the angelic form or the alien form some role in the creation process. We're not there yet, obviously, but I suspect that's going to come.
Well, you are familiar with the Brookings Institute report from many years ago, I think back in the 60s, which sort of took a look at these questions about what would happen if contact with an intelligent civilization, maybe more advanced than us, is confirmed, that it would cause incredible social disruption. That sort of sounds like social disruption to me.
Yeah, I think there'd be social disruption, but there'd be recovery from it too. I think it's a different thing to have the aliens prove that they're there, and something else to land on the White House lawn and say, hey, gang, we're taking over, okay? What I want is just for the aliens to prove beyond doubt that they're there. Then we can have a discussion about who they are and what they want. But I don't want a disclosure of the type where they land on the White House lawn and say, okay, we're running the show now. And, you know, this has been going on for 70 years at least, and if I'm right, and if other people who look at history are right, that the aliens have been here for centuries, then it appears to me that their main goal is that we humans run our own show, but do it according to good moral standards. And they made pretty explicit that they believe in, as Jesus said, loving your enemies, not blowing them up with nuclear weapons. So I think there's just a huge gap between what our scientific culture is doing. Chapter 8 deals with sociobiology and the human drive and drive in all animals to dominate each other. You know, the animals, you know, the bulls may have horns to gore each other and that kind of a stuff. We've just gone beyond that. That's what our weaponry is. We don't use horns. We don't bite and claw. We shoot guns and we use jet planes and stuff. So our weapons are an extension of our Darwinian drive to dominate. And that's what morality is supposed to control. And the more we get rid of our morality, the more what we've got left is Darwin, which can be pretty vicious.
It makes me wonder, and I'll get your opinion on this on the other side, whether they, whoever they are, would intervene to stop us from blowing ourselves up. They haven't stopped. There's a lot of things that they haven't stopped that have been horrendous on a massive scale.
Yeah.
So we'll get that on the other side of the break, talking with the Reverend Dr. Barry Downing about biblical UFO revelations. We're talking with Reverend Dr. Barry Downing about his book, Biblical UFO Revelations. Much more to cover still, but I promised I would go to the phone. So we'll take some of your calls and questions and comments in our final segment of Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Downing, I have a lot of questions. I'll just ask one, and then we'll go to the phones. I set it up on the other side of the break in that, you know, over the years, we've heard these alien editorials, in essence, from people who have encounters, and these beings tell them things like, take good care of the planet, don't blow yourselves up, you better shape up. It's as if they live here as well and are concerned about us. Would they stop, say, a nuclear holocaust? Because it doesn't seem like they've stopped us from doing incredibly horrible things over the centuries.
I can't predict. I think that obviously they didn't stop us from bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but at the same time, we didn't. I think then we were a little innocent at that point. We didn't realize what we were playing with. Now we're not innocent. So whether or not nuclear holocaust is the final lesson for human greed, power struggle, that we haven't learned to control our Darwinian drive for power and dominance, and therefore this is what happens. Basically, if we're made in the image of God, in theory, we should be able to handle divine power. But if we don't have the morality to handle divine power, then we're demonic. And so the issue of morality, the issue of love your neighbor as yourself, even to love your enemies, is not just a, you know, kind of a casual moral piece of advice from Jesus. It's actually, it has to be part of divine character. Otherwise, you end up with kind of eternal war.
Well, that's pretty close to it, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, there's not a lot of whole of moral character going around.
Nope. Never been that popular. And the reason there are Ten Commandments is that they're not what we want to do, okay? They go against our Darwinian nature.
First-time caller Laura in Maine. You're on with Barry Downing. What's on your mind?
Hi, George. Hi, Reverend. What I wanted to ask, I hope it hasn't already been addressed, was what was the purpose of the ETs wanting to create religion?
Well, as I said, I think it's if we don't have kind of a good moral set, then as our scientific knowledge increases, we just become more and more dangerous, and in fact, in danger of making ourselves extinct, which is maybe going to happen for a lot of reasons, not just nuclear war, but also destruction of the environment in general.
And Laura, do you mean multiple religions?
Yes.
Yeah, why create a bunch of different versions?
Well, there are many tribes in Israel. I don't think God is not against diversity. I would say that some religions are more peaceful than others, and that maybe we need to weigh which ones seem to work toward peace the best.
East of the Rockies, Joe. Thank you, Laura. Appreciate it. East of the Rockies, Joe in Massachusetts. Hi, Joe.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was wondering, in the Bible, is this evidence of gods? Because in Genesis, in the beginning, it says that let us create man in our image, plural. Whereas, you know, we always look at God as a man with a white beard in heaven, type of thing like that. And the Nephilim. Do you believe the Nephilim is a true story, the giants on the earth?
I know that the Nephilim in the Genesis 6 were the sons of God came down and mated with human women is a key part of some conservative Christian interpretation of what's going on now. Chuck Missler has written a book called Alien Encounters, and it basically deals with Genesis 6 and some other material, including the Book of Enoch. You know, your observation that Genesis says, let us make God in our own image and make humans in our own image suggests a plurality. I don't know how to answer that either, except that if the angels of God were involved in the creation process, why, it would make sense to use the plural there.
Thanks, Joe. You do go in your book into discussing angels versus fallen angels versus demons, a distinction of some import.
Yes.
I don't know if, maybe it's too much to go into.
Timothy Daly has written a book called The Millennial Deception. And then Gary Bates has written a book called Alien Intrusion. Both of them argue that UFOs are demonic and not fallen angels. I think Gary Bates doesn't like Chuck Missler's ideas of linking it to Genesis 6 because he's pretty sure that the Eric von Daniken interpretation of Genesis 6 would prevail in a pinch, and that is that von Daniken says that crossbreeding was going on in Genesis 6, and the aliens are doing the crossbreeding. And Don Daniken doesn't bring God into it at all. Whereas from Missler's point of view, the fallen angels were part of a group that disobeyed God and came to Earth and had sex with human women, which they were forbidden to do. And that explains some of the UFO stories where aliens seem to be abducting humans and doing sexual things with them.
You know, I'm a little disturbed. You mentioned about end times kind of premonitions and predictions in the book, and the idea that some folks are ready for it. They are anxious for the reaping to get underway, and the rest of us sinners go away. That bothers me.
And you worry that some people in power may in government, if you had fundamentalists in pushing the button, in the nuclear button, they might feel they're doing God a favor to bring about the end. I guess this is something to worry about. finally, though, I guess you have to hope that there is a higher power that has more control of things than it looks like. I assume that God has to balance the desire to have humans be free on the one hand, and on the other hand, not so free that we destroy ourselves. That's my hope. Whether or not that turns out to be true, I don't know. But certainly the whole idea of life after death suggests that the worst that we can do is kill ourselves off here, but God can save kind of the personality of each person in a world beyond the world we're in now. I hope that's true. That's part of what I preach. So time will tell.
We're going to go to Allentown, Pennsylvania. Walt on the wildcard line. Hi, Walt.
Hi, George. When I say hi, George, I'm usually speaking to Mr. Norrie. I've never been on with Mr. Knapp.
Well, welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, with deference to your guest, he doesn't seem to acknowledge the fact that Darwin provides for our sense of morality. Our morality, our conscience, our sense of right and wrong is the natural result of evolution. If you look at the way our simian relatives, the chimpanzees, the gorillas, and the orangutans interact in their societies, they adhere to an innate, if you will, a Ten Commandments. In other words, if a chimpanzee possesses a banana or a piece of fruit, the others instinctively know that they're not to steal it.
Well, would you say instinctively, Walt, that the humans act that way?
Well, what I'm saying is that morality is innate in us. Even if you look at a wolf pack, you know what I mean? They have a pecking order when they make a kill. They know that the males eat first and then the females, et cetera.
You all right, Walt, I'll tell you what. Let's let Dr. Downing to address that. What do you think, Barry?
All right, you brought up pecking order. If 15 chickens are in a roost, the number one chicken has the right to peck the other 14, and no one pecks her back. The number 15th chicken gets pecked by everybody and gets to peck no one back. And you can always spot the 15th chicken in the roost because it has almost no feathers and it's probably going to die very soon. That's Darwin's morality. Survival of the fittest. Basically, the strong get to reproduce and the weak die off. That's Darwinism. And Jesus preaches the reverse. He who would save his life should lose it, and he who loses his life will find it. That's the exact opposite of Darwinian drive for dominance. Chapter 8, by the way, in my book deals with this.
Thanks, Walt. Appreciate the call. Joe in the Bronx. Hey, Joe. Good morning.
George, how are you?
All right.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask Dr. Barry Downing. Now, the Vatican has an observatory, a telescope on Mount Graham in Arizona. I believe it's called Lucifer. Do you have any updates on what they're working on? And also, the previous Pope, Pope Benedict, did mention, I believe in a statement that was released, that we should have respect for our, I don't know if he used the term extraterrestrial brothers, but there was some alluding to that effect. Can you comment on that?
Okay, I don't know what they're working on in the Arizona Observatory. And in terms of whether one of the other popes spoke about extraterrestrial life, I know that the Pope's astronomer was questioned about what we should do if we meet aliens, and his suggestion was we should baptize them. And beyond that, I don't know the Catholic position.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. I should mention, Barry, when I first started out and doing the first series about UFOs in the late 80s, I got a letter from the Vatican asking for a copy of the series that we had done, and I was just astounded that that they were open about their interest and were collecting information from, I presume, around the world.
Yes, well, they've taken it seriously. But at the same time, they're not interested in telling us what they've concluded.
Yeah.
And what I conclude is that it would be revolutionary for traditional Catholic faith. And as I said, it's one thing for the Catholic Church to have decided that the Fatima experience in 1917 was supernatural, and to certify it as a real miracle, which the Church did, and then discover now that what was seen would be called a flying saucer now, and we're probably going to have to look at that as some type of advanced technology, not as supernatural. I think that is a huge stumbling block for the Catholic Church to release what information they have.
Of course, the Dolan Zabel sort of structure that you used in your book, the idea that there is a breakaway civilization, in essence, the keepers of the secrets. The people who know at least more than we do about what's really going on, where these visitors are from, how their technology works. I wonder what would happen to them, depending on the type of disclosure event that happens, when the general public finds out that they've been keeping this hidden, that they've been lying about it all these years, stealing trillions or billions of dollars, hundreds of billions, to conduct secret research.
Well, I would think that eventually Congress would say, maybe we don't need so much of that black budget money to be going out to you guys now that we know everybody knows that the aliens are there, okay? So I would think that their funding would be cut off to some extent. And I'm sure that some of the secrets would be kept. You know, just because we'll say the aliens did something like what they did at Fatima, but maybe did it at a few football games or something like that, so that the lid was off and the government couldn't lie anymore about their existence. At the same time, the government could probably lie about what they know about the aliens if they wanted to. I mean, Dolan and Zabel say it's most likely there'd be a partial confession on the part of the government or a partial lifting of the lid, but that they would keep a lot of secret as long as they could. My guess is that's how it'd go. The question would be how much Congress would get some backbone up and say, hey, we're not giving you guys money anymore.
Well, we Americans kind of assume that if there's a landing, it'll be on the White House lawn or it's going to be here. Maybe not. I mean, you raised the scenario a couple of places in your book. Maybe it's a flying saucer lands in Mexico and out gets Jesus.
Right. Well, and I also I had an imaginary alien that I called Zorg that showed up here and there that would then we would have to deal with. But yeah, if a UFO landed in Mexico and you had, you know, a few hundred people see it land like at a soccer stadium there, and somebody gets out of the UFO and takes a microphone and says, I'm Jesus, I'm not here for my second coming, but I am here to say I wish you guys would shape up and obey my commandments and then jump back in the UFO and fly away. You know, I would say that huge numbers of Americans would discount it because it happened in Mexico. I think we know who those people might be who would discount it. But at the same time, America is seeing itself as the number one nation in the world. We're more like Egypt than Israel from a theological point of view, meaning we're power. We're not a little weak slave nation. And so the God of the Bible seems to refer to the weak, the slave nation. That's the image of Jesus is crucified. He's a weak God instead of a strong God, which is why he was rejected by many people. And so it it would not be surprising if the UFOs used some type of an approach that would underscore the weakness of God as opposed to the power of God. To some extent, the fact that the aliens are there, and assuming they are with God or representing God, their restraint of power over the past 70 years is quite astounding.
We haven't had the Red Sea part any in recent times, but you think that there are biblical level events happening now, and it makes me wonder how they're trying to shape our spiritual or religious beliefs.
Well, we've got the MUFON reports between 500 and 1,000 UFO sightings every month. That's a lot of sightings. And, of course, only a small percentage of the world even knows MUFON exists. And so most people that are seeing UFOs are not running to their computer to contact the MUFON website and type in their sighting events, you know. So they certainly could achieve the goal of making everybody realize they're real just by thousands of daily sightings or monthly sightings. Eventually, if all your friends have seen a UFO, you're kind of going to lean toward believing it, you know.
Dr. Barry Downing, thanks very much. Biblical UFO Revelations is the book, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. Thanks for being here. I hope to run into you on the trail.
Okay. Good to be
thanks.
Here.
All right. Thanks also to my earlier guest, Dr. Paul Kingsbury and Dr. Kristen Willemeyer, and to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Nathan Staton, Donna Walker, Dan Galati, our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, and producer Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back next Sunday. Good night, everyone.